Welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me in studio, as always, is Maria. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You?
I'm good, thank you. And special guest David Luby, who is a writer, has published his debut novel, A Billion Sharp Pieces. Welcome, David. How are you?
Hi, Enda. Hi, Maria. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
We're very happy to have you with us today, because obviously we love your book, and you know, it's something that straddles Spain and Ireland, and for us that's always something juicy and wonderful to talk about. So David, we know you have traveled to Spain, you know, you've gone there on you know, a couple of occasions perhaps. When you were there, did you fall in love with any parts of Spanish culture?
Yeah, I think I got my first taste of Spanish culture boarding the train at the French border at Irun. I'd been traveling around France, and I remember having to fight my way onto the train gangway as scores of Spanish tried to disembark. So it was a real eye-opener in terms of how assertive the Spanish could be. But then I saw, I suppose, their humble, exuberant side in San Sebastian and Zaragoza and Madrid and several other times I visited also. You just see the purity and the exuberance in the culture in La Tomatina, in Pamplona with the racing of the bulls, and the passion of the flamenco, the late nights with children and grandparents, great-grandparents out in the squares. I suppose it's probably possibly the last bastion of community spirit really in Europe, or at least the exemplar of that, you know?
Well, you've clearly traveled quite a bit through Spain, and I imagine elsewhere. So do you think like traveling has influenced your writing and how?
Yeah, well, I am from an international family, if you will, because my mother's American, my father's from Kerry. So I've been on a plane on and off since I was 5 months old. On that trip, we got snowed in at Logan Airport in Boston. I ended up staying in a room next to Angela Lansbury, of all people. So, yeah, that was the start of it. And that two-flight journey to upstate New York has been my main travel over the years. But then I suppose I got a taste of really enjoying traveling around Europe when I interrailed when I was in my early 20s with three friends. Since then, I've traveled to more than 20 countries across Europe and South America, the UAE, etc. And I do really feel privileged to have been able to travel as much as I have. I think as a writer, travel does give you a bigger palette to work with. You know, it's exciting, it's sexy, it's always ripe with randomness, which is great inspiration for any writer who wants to take readers on a journey full of surprises and twists and turns. And traveling to San Sebastian, I suppose, seeing that beautiful coast, the churches, the cider poured from a height, seeing it all firsthand, made it kind of easier for me to hopefully create a realistic image of the city. And I suppose on my travels I've also journaled a lot too, and I really do agree with the saying that travel broadens the mind, because in Ireland I suppose we're quite lucky in a sense we're sheltered from extremes, well, apart from maybe some religious extremes in the past, but I'm talking more like weather, poverty, social unrest. So I have witnessed more of these extremes abroad, and I believe this is, I suppose, made my ability to write maybe a little more rounded, but also would have impacted the scope of my writing, informing some of my characters and some of my books that I've written.
Fascinating stuff in many senses. The Angela Lansbury one, for those who don't know, she lived in Cork, didn't she? I think
she did, especially obviously in the latter stages of her life. But it was just a random encounter. I think she bought me nappies, my mother nappies for me at the time. So it was, I don't recall it, but yeah, it was an interesting story at least.
Oh, fantastic. And you mentioned as well, yeah, you keep in the journal and obviously, you know, you have a background as a journalist as well. And I'm just kind of curious, from your perspective, do you see like a really strong link between the world of journalism and the world of writing fiction? Because I guess you know, both rely on communication and sharing knowledge and insight as well, don't they?
They do. They do, of course. I worked as a journalist for 22 years, covering a huge variety of stories. They do say life is stranger than fiction, and some of the cases I would have reported on would definitely test the imaginations of some really, really good writers. So I suppose the fiction that I enjoy is mainly fast-paced, concise, informative, and challenging. These are stories that kind of sweep you away, surprise, and hit you emotionally. And these are traits that I've tried to develop in the stories I wrote. So yes, that painterly sharing of knowledge and insight in an energetic, colorful way is common to both mediums. The difference between journalism and fiction writing is that the former often relies on topics, trends, and incidents for content, whereas fiction is all about people, what makes them tick, their secrets, and their motivations.
Wow, that is an interesting reflection. You said you've worked in a number of things. One of them was like crime reporting, which, you know, it's, I suppose it's interesting seeing that, you know, you like writing thrillers as well. So are there any elements from that, that some of the darker elements you've mentioned that some things defy, you know, the imagination? Have some of those elements influenced you as well for this book in particular?
I think they can't help but when you spend so much of your working life in courtrooms and talking to police, you know, attending maybe press conferences in relation to crimes, that you it does filter its way into your consciousness when you are drawing out these characters and trying to make them, you know, trying to get into their mindset, you know, because nobody wants to read a very one-dimensional character. You want to really get inside under their skin. So I think that definitely, you know, just the thought processes and the calculations they make have found their way into my books, definitely, yeah.
So, you know, you've been influenced as a writer from your travels, from your previous professional experiences as well. But behind every great writer is a reader, no? And I'm sure you devour books like we do as well. Are there any writers that have either inspired your writing directly or, I guess, more generally, you're just big fans of what they do?
Yeah, similar to you, I kind of always have a book on the go. You guys, I always have a book on the go. I suppose for myself, my own perspective, after Roald Dahl, my first obsession was probably Joseph Conrad, who I started reading when I was in UCC and studying, actually, as part of my first year studies. And I suppose he depicted life in such a deceptively simple, relatable, and human way, while also opening your eyes to the world and to, you know, various characters. Patricia Highsmith, who wrote The Talented Mr. Ripley famously, kind of her ability to make you constantly feel in suspense. Jeffrey Eugenides, who wrote, you know, Middlesex and The Virgin Suicides, for his wonderful ability to craft sentences and stories that can edify and entertain at the same time. Edgar Allan Poe, so many of these people would have inspired me. But they're probably my main inspirations. But obviously, you know, I just finished a book there recently and it was called Flesh. It's just that it won the Booker Prize. And, you know, so you're always learning. I think you're always learning. And the more you read, the more you can understand the landscape of fiction, and the better that is, really, I think.
Definitely. And in A Billion Star Pieces, there are some subjects that are, we could say, really meaty. It tackles some really big things, like, you know, toxic masculinity, mental health, identity. They're really big topics. So how do you approach them?
Yeah.
Or how did you approach them when you were writing the book?
Yeah, look, these are, I suppose, topics that have been on my mind for quite some time, and you know, the book is probably an exorcism in some shapes and forms as well. But I'm 48 now, so I have been reflecting for a while now on my youth and And as someone who tries to keep abreast of the news, I'm increasingly aware of toxic masculinity. I have a partner, Emma Mahoney, who's a feminist, and she has also added to my awareness of this behavior. But all this prompted me to reflect on things I heard and witnessed in my teens, at school and in college. I suppose that pressure for young men, teenagers, boys to be tough and not show any weakness or vulnerability. And then how that often morphs into, you know, bottled up feelings of anger and frustration, and that can lead to violence. So, you know, it's, you witness all kinds of things. And I suppose the job of the writer is, you know, to sit and reflect on life. And that invariably leads you to reflect on things you have witnessed yourself, you know. And you know, we all have witnessed, unfortunately, like, extreme things in our life too. But in terms of like the mental health, you know, we all have mental health. I certainly have experienced some mental health difficulties over the years. I think, you know, most people do. And then it's, I just love the openness then of artists who really share very much their own experiences, you know, like Eugene O'Neill, the playwright, Jeff Buckley, the singer-songwriter. You know, it's about recognizing our common humanity, really, our faults, our mistakes, what we can't hold as individuals. So, you know, from a singer who screams in a song to a monologue that leaves you really emotionally moved, I suppose it's about being open. So that kind of frees readers then to open up as well and feel maybe less alone. So that's pretty much been at the heart of my ability to overcome my issues, is just through that connection, through art. So hopefully my work will be able to be helpful to someone out there too.
That's very interesting, because I suppose that's the whole reason behind any form of art or creation. So you've mentioned about our mental health, you mentioned about reflecting on the past, and the past is quite an important element in the book. So because basically, there's a big element of, you know, how much the characters can shake off their past. So do you think it's hard for them to do that? Is that trying to reflect what is like for you, or in your opinion, in real life?
Yeah, I think the past experiences of the two main characters, Todd and Jack, you know, defined them really, and especially their relationship. In a way, in Jack, you have someone who kind of is irredeemable, apart from his charisma and obvious self-destructive streaks. You know, he's someone who is just out for himself. And Todd, you have somebody who's experienced numerous traumas, both of his own and others' making. And that is kind of the central tension and conflict of the relationship and within themselves. So it's that axis upon which the plot turns in the book. So the past, you know, yes, it begins in 2018 on a beautiful beach in San Sebastian, and you know, life is seemingly fantastic, but there's a long shadow not too far out of sight, and that, you know, really kind of comes to engulf them both, you know, as they do encounter each other. And yeah, I don't want to give too much away about the plot, but I it's inextricable really from the who they are and who they become.
It's all wonderfully meaty. And as you say, you know, toxic masculinity, it's not very good in society and something that needs to be corrected. But I just wonder, from a writing perspective, you know, is it fun or creatively, you know, enriching to write a character, you know, like Jack, who's a terrible person in so many ways, but then charismatic? Like, as a writer, I mean, is there something that give, you know, is there a bit of juice to that makes it fun to write somebody like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I suppose, like, in real life, no one is black or white, really. It's basically in Jack, I've tried to portray someone who ticks the boxes of what a successful, strong, young Irish man is or was in the 2000s, you know, and maybe it's a sad reflection of where I believe male culture was at, but then it had been like that for so long. I suppose, you know, looking back at this tolerance that society had and hero worship of even some celebrities who were kind of, for their shouty, arrogant, drunken behavior, So that performative maleness, you know, I wanted to kind of reflect that through Jack, who, like, someone like him is somebody who comes across as really confident, but he is entitled, and he's also from a very kind of wealthy background. So I think people like that sometimes do have, you know, an aura and kind of an invincibility about them, which can be hypnotic to observe up close, you know. So he's also a clown who can't help himself, and he never acknowledges his bad behavior, and that's kind of, that tragedy kind of defines him. But it was very interesting to write him. And I do subscribe to the belief that villains often do make the best characters. You know, think of Valmont in Dangerous Liaisons, Macbeth, Hannibal Lecter. Some of these can be kind of charismatic or interesting people, but they also kind of have a power and a freedom to them that is interesting to kind of explore. So I played on Jack's narcissism in A Billion Sharp Pieces, and enjoyed making him a figure of fun, you know, a larger-than-life character who can only fall from the lofty perch he has erected for himself. So I tried to kind of, you know, frame his awfulness as his, you know, his lack of conscience in terms of his psychological flaws and that inability to care about redeeming himself, you know. So it is interesting to look at people who kind of have a mix of charisma and cruelty. And, you know, I wanted to pull back the mask of someone like that, someone kind of dominant, even animalistic, really, to reveal the kind of the ugly, rotten core.
Well, there's a lot of elements there that, you know, are focused on some mental issues or some attitudes that might not be positive at all. But then, without wanting to do any spoilers, actually, the book has a kind of a positive ending. So do you think, is your book ultimately a hopeful one that, you know, these characters can be redeemed and changed?
Yeah, you know, I suppose I was trying to write a book that captured two different parts of characters' lives, you know, in their teens, and often in teens, everything is so heightened and can be quite kind of dark and challenging, because there's so much really high expectations and so much to, you know, that people want to achieve, but, you know, they just can't get to where they want to be. So anyway, that can be, I was trying to picture that, and then maybe a more mature aspect to some of the characters also, you know. So I think it's kind of a wild ride of a book, really. It's kind of a bit like a haunted roller coaster ride in a way. It depicts one man's tortured journey from those really hopeless, kind of battled youth for years, kind of when he's really bitter and full of rage and desperation, to a time of love and hope in adulthood. So I tried to portray a relatable, kind of idiosyncratic character who can't help, unfortunately, but get in his own way, but who ultimately, through kind of meeting certain people and positive influences on him, chance and his own survival instincts, you know, he finds a reason to live. And, you know, so I wanted to show both aspects. So yes, it is kind of a hopeful survival story. But God, does it get dark along the way before that light shines through, you know?
Well, I think if readers pick it up, and I'm sure they will, they'll find a fantastic story from start to finish, A Billion Sharp Pieces. And David, thank you so much for being with us on the podcast to talk about it. We really appreciate all your insights into the book.
Thank you, and thank you, Maria. All the best.